Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Albrecht and Kester. Max Power in producing for us this week as we get you ready for hour number two. And on a Thursday, that means our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com. We bring in Fitz. Fitz, We always love to come to you with our cultural needs as well as our K-State needs. You don't know anything about this, but I have to know because it is something that we've been talking about probably more than we should. Do you know what an upside down pineapple represents?
Yes.
How did I miss this? So I've learned. So we have Hawaiian Shirt Wednesdays here on the program, as I think you know. And I learned on a recent trip back home by somebody, one of my favorite Hawaiians is loaded with them. And I had no idea what that implied.
You were really popular that day.
I think so. I was like, man, everybody's being so nice to me.
Hey, you want to meet my wife?
I've been wearing that shirt for like 3-4 years, like at least once a week in the summertime. Had no idea. No idea. And I figured if anybody... Yeah, if anybody knew what that meant,
and it by would the be way, you know how like peacocks when you know they spread their feathers out, they're presenting. Yep. Clearly, you've been presenting for a few years.
I think so. I guess so. I didn't even know, but hey, what we'll see. All right, Fitz, K-State. I don't know how else to describe this. This game terrifies me. I don't like. It's not. You know, I was excited about the Colorado game. I was really getting hyped up for it. I'm not excited about this game. At all, like not even a little bit. This game has trap written all over it. The hope is that K-State knows that. The hope is that, you know, they can't let that sneak up on them. And I don't think they'll mean to, but man, the late night in Colorado, all the injuries sustained in that game, having to go the other direction now, and Kansas looming next week. Like it checks all the boxes.
Yeah, it does. And this was the game I picked at the start of the season to be the linchpin game. Because I feel like sandwiched between what was going to be and was a really emotional, hard-hitting game at Colorado, and you got Kansas on the other side, which I'm going to recognize is diminished in stature a little bit this year, but it's still Kansas. They're still good, and it's still a rivalry. And you got West Virginia on the road right in the middle of those two. It's been the game that I think will decide what K-State's fate is this season. If they go and lose this one, they're going to lose 3 or 4 games. I fear they'll lose maybe 3. And if they win, guys, they can just go take care of business until they go to Iowa State. You know, you can lose any game in this conference. We know that. But you got 3 games at home in there and a road game at Houston before you go to Iowa State. So this game opens up great possibilities for K-State, or it slams the door shut.
Fitz, there were so many takeaways from the Colorado game. The one that sticks out to me almost a week after that game that I'm still thinking about and really figuring out what it means for this team, you know, for the rest of the season, is that DJ Giddens might be the best running back in the Big 12. He probably is the best running back in the Big 12 and has solidified himself, I think, in that regard. Just, you know, incredibly effective, and his production, you know, continues to increase with this team. And so offensively, with when you've got all of these weapons and you've got all these different things in the way that, you know, they want to run this offense with Avery Johnson at the helm, having a, you know, Mr. Reliable, consistent ground threat in DJ Giddens, that's paramount for the Wildcats, especially as they get into the second half of the season.
Well, DJ Giddens has taken a huge step this season. He's gone from a guy when he first started out that, you know, was going to fall forward, you know, take on tackles, fearless, to having some moves, you know, being able to throw a spin move in. At Colorado, he earned every yard. I mean, he would pop through the line and there'd be a tackler, and that tackler, let's just use the name Shiloh, would end up on his knees praying that he could possibly touch DJ Giddens. His ability to make tacklers miss in that game was unbelievable. And then he'd add in, I'm going to run your butt over. He's turned into a really special running back. And I said this earlier this week on one of my daily delivery videos. He's going to go down as one of the great running backs at Kansas State. And who would have thunk that a year ago? I mean, two seasons ago, certainly not. A year ago, maybe. But this year, he's made it very clear. He's among the best at K-State, and that's incredible. He's a self-made back, and I just love him for it.
Yeah, and he doesn't look like what you think he's going to look like either. Uh-huh. And you know he'll be a big part of this game. What have you scouted on West Virginia? We know, or at least it's appeared to me for a while, Kansas State wants to play teams that throw the ball, and they're willing to let them throw the ball, and they want to create sack and turnover opportunities for the defense. Is West Virginia going to do that, or is West Virginia going to do what they should and try to run the ball first against K-State?
Yeah, they're a run-first team. Garrett Green's one of my favorite quarterbacks in the Big 12, not because his skill set's elite, but his heart is. He fights. He scraps. He is not a bad thrower, but by Big 12 standards, he's below average comparing to the other quarterbacks in this league. I expect him to get out and scoot around quite a bit. The one thing Kansas State really hasn't faced this year in this run of trying to force teams to throw is a true running threat at quarterback, and he brings that. So that's a whole different dimension for K-State to take on. This could be a quick game. Both teams are going to want to run.
Let's talk about the Wildcat defense a little bit, Fitz. In the game against Colorado, the pass rush was clearly the leader when it came to what they wanted to do defensively. I mean, you know, and some of that is on Shedeur Sanders. Sanders is so dynamic that, you know, when they were able to make him uncomfortable, that was when they had the best success. When we look at the secondary, though, for the Wildcats, you know, Sanders put up some good numbers when he had time to pass against Kansas State. Is that indicative of anything moving forward with the secondary that needs to be improved upon, or is that more of the fact that Shedeur Sanders is just a great quarterback?
Well, yeah, that was a big part of it. He was really special.
Yeah.
He was constantly being harassed and still completing passes. He's better than I ever imagined, to be honest. And there's some holes in the secondary. There's no doubt about that. They're not as good in zone coverage. You can see it. First of all, I hate zone coverage, particularly when guys are protecting an area of grass and not the receiver standing 3 feet away from them, which is pretty common when you see that in zone coverage. And they have some, you know, questions in the secondary now. You know, who's all going to be healthy after that rash of injuries at Colorado? Coach Kleiman thought they'd all be ready to go, but that was on Monday. You know, he thought they'd know better by Wednesday. So maybe this afternoon when we talk to the coordinators, we'll have a better idea. But they don't have a whole lot of cornerback depth, at least quality, experience depth. And to have Jacob Parrish go down and be questionable for this game, it's not a good sign.
It's so unusual. Tim Fitzgerald, publisher of GoPowerCat.com, joining us. It's so unusual to see flash and flare at a K-State. I think it catches people off guard. But I got to tell you, I love the prime dance in the end zone. I love the selfie with the fan on the bike. I love all of it. I do look for the little things, and I think that matters in putting K-State in the headlines and on the front of highlights and on the videos. I think that matters for the program big picture. How are people taking that flash from a program that, you know, is Bill Snyder, right? It's Chris Klieman. It's like none of that. Like, we don't do any, but clearly Avery Johnson does. And it's unusual, but I think it's awesome. How are people taking it?
None of it feels staged. None of it feels
forced. No, I don't think it
forced.
Is at all.
And yeah. It's just him. And it's fun. That selfie was hysterical. And how many people, K-State fans, said, what would Coach Snyder do if that happened on his sideline? Well, Coach Snyder wouldn't have made it this long in the NIL era to start with.
And he wouldn't have recruited Avery Johnson either.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't have landed him. So, look, he's just a special player. He's a really special young man. And we're seeing him grow and develop. And I think those signs are kind of indications of his growing confidence, that he knows who he is as a player and what he can do. He was pretty darn good at Colorado. But that was also a game where just hang on to DJ Giddens. He's going to pull you across the line. And he did, even in the last drive. I mean, just a huge catch and run out to the 50. But Avery put the ball where it needed to be put on the last two pass plays and got him into the end zone. He's a gamer, and he's only going to get better.
Fitz, we talked a lot, you know, especially coming into this season, about the offensive line at Kansas State and basically the need to rebuild that offensive line. And I think that while, you know, it probably hasn't been perfect, knowing what Kansas State has been able to do from that perspective in run blocking and even pass blocking on Avery Johnson, taking on a West Virginia team that's got a kid in TJ Jackson who is really good at getting into the backfield, this is going to be a decent test for them, especially, you know, as it relates to protecting Avery Johnson.
Yeah, you're right. I think they're going to really just try to run the ball most of the day.
Yeah.
And the question here is Avery available to run the ball? Because of his injury at Colorado, they took that off the table in the game. And, you know, people were wondering why he wasn't running. They were trying to protect him because he was dinged up pretty good, I think, with that hip. So will he be back in the game plan to run the ball? If not, it's going to get interesting because they're just going to have to line up and run it with DJ and Dylan Edwards and get the job done. But yeah, when they have to pass, he's got to be mobile. If he's not, he's just going to be under a lot of pressure. And he didn't move around as much in the pocket as I expected him to do at Colorado, but they're going to be after him, and I don't blame him. He's a little bit limited right now, and we'll see what he can put on the field.
That's interesting. We're talking line and DJ Giddens and all these things, because they probably do have to run the ball. That bye week to get everybody rested isn't for a while. It's not. They'll play three games before they get the extra rest. Looking at the Big 12 as a whole, I'm not surprised that it's competitive. I think it's a little upside down from what we thought, Fitz. But I look at it, and I know I don't think K-State can lose a game. Nothing changes every week that we get another week in, and I think it's even less likely that they can afford to lose another game and play in the Big 12 championship game. They've got a Texas Tech scheduling problem. They've got a BYU problem on a tiebreaker. It just doesn't seem likely to me that it seems like they got to win out.
Yeah, I agree. What I'm loving about how this is playing out, and we know the Big 12 underdog could win this weekend.
Yeah.
But the way this is playing out is going to put a lot of pressure on the College Football Playoff Committee. I mean, you're looking at a conference that could end up with three teams, 11 or 12 wins. And so one team might be 11-1 and sitting on the sideline, not even playing on championship Saturday. What do you do with them? I mean, they're 11-1. You could end up with three one-loss teams out of the Big 12 at the end of the day, and what are they going to do with that? So we're going to find out a lot. This is going to test the committee. Are they really committed to just putting SEC teams in this playoff, or are they really committed to putting the best teams in this playoff? Because I think we're learning that college football is evening out. Seeing Alabama retreat a little bit is good for college football. Seeing Ohio State, Michigan, and lose is good for college football. I just pose this question to all of those who think the Big Ten and SEC are superior. How come teams from the Big 12 and Pac-12 walked in and are leading those conferences? How's that possible if those two conferences have always been better and much far superior? You add teams from different conferences and they start winning the games. That should be impossible in your fantasy world, but it's not. It's happening. There's not that big a gap between these conferences, and there never was. It's just a lot of marketing.
You know as well as I do, Fitz, that if Georgia loses to Texas this week and they have two losses and they're out of the SEC championship game and BYU goes unbeaten and loses in a Big 12 championship game and you've got Georgia sitting there with two losses and BYU with one, you know damn good and well who's going to the playoff. I mean, there is no chance they're putting one loss BYU in over two loss Georgia. I mean, no chance.
No chance. Nobody in the country would be picked over two loss Georgia with one loss. I really believe that. Maybe if Ohio State didn't get in, but man, they just lean into those brands so much. And you do have to stop and wonder if Georgia's losing to Big 12 teams that, you know, for example, Texas, that hadn't won a Big 12 championship till last year in any significant time period. What's that mean? I mean, look, let's let this play out. But it's going to get very interesting. We're going to find out about the future of college football. If the books are cooked for the SEC and Big Ten this year, we might find out right out of the gate that that's happening. And that will probably be a great controversy and something that Brett Yormark is going to have to really hammer back at, not push back, hammer back at.
Fitz, you're kind of our conference realignment expert here on the program. You know, this news dropped a little less than two weeks ago of the College Student Football League and sort of that implosion of the FBS that there are multiple university presidents and athletic directors that are proposing this. And the full rollout came just a couple of weeks ago. Is this a legitimate thing? Is this something that, you know, we can think about as potentially happening down the road? I'm guessing that there's a really long and, uphill battle to get this to fruition.
Yeah, I think there's now three plans on the table. What they have in common is, for the most part, is getting rid of conferences and football. And, you know, at least at the upper level, and just have everyone play in a giant conference. And that allows you to kind of reorganize and go back around and have play more regional conferences for the rest of your sports. So there's some real benefits to it. The problem is the Big Ten and SEC, again, just think they're so far superior to everyone. They don't want 70. They just want their two conferences because, you know, Purdue is surely better than everyone in the Big 12. I mean, this is just nonsense. What Greg Sankey, in particular, at the SEC is trying to do is literally destroy college football for profit. And it's gross. And hopefully the rest of college football can push back and say, no, let's be inclusive. I mean, look at what's happening. Vanderbilt just beat Alabama. And you want to exclude teams that you think are lesser? That's not why people watch college football.
Right.
They watch it for those upsets.
You got to have the Cinderella factor. That's why the NCAA tournament's so successful. I agree. One more on that, kind of in that note, and I can't remember if we've talked about this, but the Pac-12 as it grows to me is screaming basketball contract, basketball TV deal, and I think, you know, we've been saying that forever with Brett Yormark. To us, it's pretty clear that's what he's doing. That's what the Pac-12 is doing too, which makes me feel good about what Brett Yormark's doing.
I think there's a realization on the athletic department side of this and the conference side that the networks have been stealing college basketball. They just have been underpaying for college basketball, and they've set a number of 10% of your contract is college basketball, and it delivers far more for that. I almost feel like they're trying to break even on football and make all their money on basketball because they have so much more inventory there, and the numbers are so huge for football. But yeah, I think this next time around, we're going to see the Big 12 pursue individual contracts for football and basketball, or football and all other sports probably. And if the Pac-12 is doing that too, this will be probably a college athletic wide movement to get more money out of basketball. Cause you just look at the NCAA tournament, how valuable that is. Are you telling me that the, The regular season has no value. It just doesn't make sense.
It's never made sense. I agree. All right, what do we have at GoPowerCat.com that we got to find before the game on Saturday night?
We got our preview of the game. Our podcast is up. It's on video just like this, so you can stare at my face, or you can turn off the video. That's probably better. And just our typical weekly coverage. I mean, we've got the Friday walkthrough coming. We've got a lot of nuts and bolts on the game, a lot of VIP stuff, analysis. I'll have my five keys up tomorrow on the site. So we're cooking. It's that time of year where we're just in the heat of the season, and these back-to-back road games are going to be a real challenge for K-State. But I think we can all recognize it's a real challenge for an old fart like me. So I'm going to just put my head down and survive. But I love West Virginia. I love going out there.
I was tired. Great music. rowdy people. I'm with you on that. All right, yeah. Fitz. Be good. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, boys. Great talk to you.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. Terrifying, Tommy. Terrifying game for me. We've talked about that one quite a bit. When we come back, let's talk about – we haven't really dug into Chiefs-Niners, and we'll sort of run out of time. We'll have our previews and our picks tomorrow. But let's get into Chiefs-Niners. BJ Glasser's on the set. We're all thinking what Austin put out. Like, Chiefs is underdogs? Come on now. But I do think this is going to be a tough game for them. This is going to be a tough game for them. We'll get into that. On the way out, let's give away some HTO. Some free iced tea, more than 25 flavors to choose from, sweet or unsweet, and some free rain coffee as well, iced or hot. You can get one of each right now by texting the keyword tea to the short code 20357. Each participant, you guys, can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck. We'll come back. We'll preview Chiefs Niners next.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily on your way into work. I want to keep listening to Sports Daily even after you park the car. With the Odyssey app and Odyssey.com, you can. Just download the app or visit Odyssey.com. Search for KFH. Download the Odyssey app today to get started. Welcome back in. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. Max Power in for Jad this week. He's got the IHOP hotline for you at 869-1240, which is brought to you by IHOP. And you can celebrate the weekdays with the new IHOP House Faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. Let's dig in a little bit here, Tommy, to Chiefs Niners. I felt like I had such a good read on the last game that the Chiefs played, and it played out exactly that way against the Saints. I don't have yet that kind of read on this one. I'm very confident that the Niners will try to utilize George Kittle a lot in this game. What I'm not quite sure of is how the Chiefs will plan to attack the Niners. Do they go that same route and go 4 tight ends at a time? Do they try and, you know, grow Juju Smith-Schuster's role? Do they try and just feed Kareem Hunt another 27 times? Like, I don't think it's as clear this week, and clearly the Niners are better than the Saints. There's no doubt about that. But this one is a little trickier. But then, you know, it's the bye week and it's the Chiefs as underdog thing and all of that sits there. But I think this one's a little tougher to handicap.
One guy that you didn't mention in all of that is the rookie Xavier Worthy. He's got an opportunity to have a big game because the Niners are really banged up, and it's not just offensively. They're banged up defensively as well. And the injury report came out yesterday, the opening injury report. Obviously, that can change between now and Sunday. But you've got Charvarius Ward, their cornerback, who is questionable for the game. Like, they've got some issues defensively with injuries as well. And so I think that that does open up the opportunity for Xavier Worthy to get a few looks and maybe some pretty good shots from Mahomes in that game. I like what you said about the Chiefs feeding Kareem Hunt. I think that's going to be, you know, part a large part of the game plan, especially considering coming off of the bye. It's been, you know, pretty wild. It's been a wild couple of weeks for Kareem Hunt, with probably not a whole lot of opportunities to just sort of like get reacclimated to being part of the organization. Yeah. But coming off of a bye week, he was able to do that a little bit, you would think. You know, they brought him in and he immediately was, you know, in the game on the road against the Chargers and then right back at home on Monday Night Football for a quick turnaround against the Saints a couple of weeks ago. So I would imagine that Hunt being able to get that additional rest and get, you know, maybe a little bit more settled in with Kansas City, that lends it, you know, to me thinking that they're going to feed him the ball quite a bit. So I would imagine that those two areas are going to be, you know, a large part of the game plan offensively.
So here's what's interesting with the Chiefs offensively too, outside of Kareem Hunt. Two things that you hit on there. The 49ers defense through the first month of the season was really, really good against tight ends. Really good. And then the last 2 weeks, they have not been particularly good. Or at least I should say teams have chosen to attack them with tight ends. The Cardinals and the Seahawks in their last two games, the Cardinals targeted tight ends 11 times. The Seahawks targeted them 7. That would probably tell me that the Chiefs are going to utilize the tight ends again in this game, like they did in the first half against New Orleans. Xavier Worthy's interesting. I think Xavier Worthy's interesting for the rest of the season. He was targeted 3 times against Baltimore. He was only targeted 4 times in the next 3 games. And they have had some of the injuries up to that point. Now, he was targeted 6 against the Saints. I'm real curious to see how much or if they grow his role. Like, are we going to get to a point in this season where we see more than 6 targets for Xavier Worthy? Pre-injuries,
I don't think they need to. I don't think they...
Well, so pre-injury, I would have told you no. Like, I don't think by the end of the... I think that's about his number. My question becomes, though, we know he's a deep shot guy. His targets are more than just deep shots. Like, he's not just a deep shot guy, or you don't take him in the first round. So at what point, and it could happen at any point, do they try to utilize him in some other ways too? Could we see him take on more of a lion's share of those wide receiver targets? And I don't know the answer to that question.
I just don't know. That's not his role, and that's not, and you know, if it,
it wasn't his role coming in, but what I'm saying is, can it be part of his role?
But I don't think that you want to force it. I think that, you know, one of the things that, if you look back to even a season ago with Rashee Rice as a rookie, they didn't force it. And I know it was a different situation. There weren't the injuries, you know, like we've encountered this year in the wide receiver room. But they had a clear need at wide receiver, obviously. That was pretty apparent basically from the beginning of the season, you know, moving forward. But they didn't force the ball down Rashee Rice's throat. They let him come along. And then by the time the second half of the season came along, he kind of had established himself as a consistent threat outside of, you know, just a few targets a game. That could happen with Xavier Worthy. I'm not banking on that happening in week 7. You know, if we're talking about it in week 14 or week 15, like, okay, yeah, at that point, like, I think that they'll want to try to follow that same sort of model that they did with Rashee Rice. We'll see how successful that can be. It doesn't mean that I don't think Xavier Worthy will be a key part of the offensive game plan this weekend. I certainly think that he will. I'm just not sure that they're going to try to force feed him the ball and have him do something that he's maybe not 100% comfortable with right now.
Rashee Rice last year didn't take on that role for the Chiefs. I mean, you can see when it happened. It happened against the Raiders on November 26th.
Right.
And it's not like they didn't have a need for it last year. They were terrible at the position. They absolutely had a need for it last year. They probably had more of a need for it last year than they have for it this year, if we're being honest.
But remember, they didn't force it to him until later in the season and let him come along as a rookie.
November 26th. Yeah. We're nowhere near that. That was like week 12 or 13. So Worthy probably doesn't become that until later in the season, if he ever does.
Right.
So I say that because the initial reaction for people when they saw Rashi Rice go down was, oh, you got to get Worthy. Worthy's the guy. And I'm like, no, I don't think it impacts him much at all. Now, he could come in and command the targets. That'd be awesome if he did. Out of a bye week, that'd be fantastic if he became, because we know what he can do after he catches the ball, but I think it's unlikely. We'll see what they do at receiver. The Ward injury is interesting. It, you know, to me, you got to start the way you attacked New Orleans, don't you? Like you start with the tight ends, and then you try to pepper Juju with some stuff, and you go to Hunt. I think the game plan is the same. And I think it's important to see if that's a game plan over the next 2 weeks that you can just utilize the rest of the way. Back to our other conversation about the need or non-need of a wide receiver. Like if they go through the next couple of games and they feel like the offense is looking as good or as effective as it did in this new style with all the tight ends and everything, that's something you need to find out and know now, because that may be just what you do the rest of the way. My guess is probably they'll at least try to attack San Francisco that way. Maybe they do it in a different order. Maybe they do it, you know, mix and match it. But I'll be pretty surprised if we don't see a bunch of tight ends and at least 7 or 8 targets for Juju this week.
The other thing to keep in mind with this particular game is that depending on the way the injury report shakes out, it may end up being a requirement for Brock Purdy to throw the football a lot to win the game.
Yeah.
Because Jordan Mason is on the injury report. And, you know, he's what, the NFL's second leading rusher. And that's in the absence, obviously, of Christian McCaffrey, who we know is not playing. Mason may not play also. And that's a huge blow to what the Niners want to do offensively, because it may force Brock Purdy again to throw the ball more than he's comfortable doing. There are a couple of receivers that have shown up on the injury report this week for the 49ers that were limited in practice yesterday. Debo Samuel was limited with a wrist injury, and Juwan Jennings showed up on the injury report with a hip injury, and he didn't practice at all yesterday. He didn't leave the game last week with any kind of injury, and so that was kind of a surprise for him to pop up on the did not practice report with a hip injury. So that's worth monitoring as well. It could very easily be a game that, you know, they have Purdy and Kittle. Like, that's offensively.
They're going to utilize Kittle anyway. Like, Kittle, they're going to attack the Chiefs with the tight end.
But they may not have a whole lot of other options but to pepper it to Kittle.
They'll run it because it's Kyle Shanahan. Guerrero, he was good when he stepped in for Mason last week. I mean, he had a higher draft pedigree than Mason. They'll use him. They're going to run the ball. It's Shanahan. Shanahan always runs the ball. But, yeah, you're right. And my guess is they're going to walk into this game with at least Debo and Ayuk playing. I don't know about Mason, but I think it matters less. And I don't know about Jennings because that is new, but I'll bet you Debo and Ayuk. They all want to play in it.
I disagree as far as the importance of having Jordan Mason out there. I think that does matter if he's there.
It matters.
Or not.
No. Let me rephrase it. Of course it matters. What I'm saying is it's not going to change the game plan for Shanahan. Shanahan will run the ball no matter who he has. He's done that throughout his entire career. He runs the ball, so he'll run it. Is it as effective with Guerrero as Mason? I don't know how you could responsibly say that. Mason's been fantastic.
Keep in mind, too, the way the Chiefs' run defense has been throughout the entire season.
I don't know that that's the factor that I'm looking at anyway, right? Like, I don't know that the Chiefs are going to let... Now, nobody schemes up the run game better than Kyle Shanahan. Nobody does. So, but it's going to be a Kittle game. It's going to be a Kittle game, and the Chiefs... I'm with Glasser. I really like the under in this game. I just think it's a good play. And I think both teams are very comfortable with that sort of game flow in this game, by the way, just letting it go. But as far as like these Knicks and if these Niners can go, they're going to go. They want to beat the Chiefs badly. That's too super for guys like Debo and Kittle. I don't think was Ayuk there the first time? Maybe he was a rookie. Like, these guys want revenge on the Chiefs. There's no doubt about it. They want revenge on the Chiefs. So I think they'll play, but I like the under. I'm with you guys. I like the Chiefs as far as being the underdog and getting a point. I like the Chiefs almost anytime they can get a point, especially coming out of a bye, but so will the masses. Like, everybody on the planet's going to bet the Chiefs in this game. So it does feel a little bit dangerous in that way to me.
It's interesting. The perception, I think, has been, and I even thought this too for a while, the perception has been that with the close games that the Chiefs have played this year, that they haven't done a good job at covering the spread. They have. They're 4-1 against the spread this year. The only game that they didn't was the Bengals game in week two when they only won by a point. But they've covered the spread in every other game. It's been down to the wire in a lot of them.
Right.
But, you know, remember, this team a year ago was bad at covering the spread. Like, it got to the point to where you really weren't sure if you wanted to pick them ATS because of just the struggles they had in covering the number. They've done that at a much better clip this year. And this is the first time this season they've gotten points. So they're 4-1 against the spread, and they've been favored in all five of those games. So I think it is an opportunity, and probably why, actually definitely why, so people are betting the Chiefs a ton.
The Chiefs last year were 13-7-1 against the spread. They last year
take
was
the playoffs out, take the playoff run completely out of it, and it probably wasn't. It was probably closer to 500, I would think.
Yeah, probably. But they were 9-11 the year before that, and just because they've been a bad covering team. They were 500 the year before in 2021. They always had this perception. Now I think it's shifted a little bit on them, and they're built. Teams that play great defense are good to cover and spread. But we got to remember too, Baltimore was a toenail away from a non-cover. Like, it's those trends. Those trends to me don't matter as much as what Patrick Mahomes does as an underdog and what Andy Reid does coming out of a bye week. I think if this was a game not coming out of a bye week, I would be far more inclined to like San Francisco in this game. It's the bye week that makes it really tricky for me to look at it as the Niners' opportunity like it normally would. Because if the bye week wasn't there and this line was the exact same, I'd be like, hammer the Niners here. But it's not. It's after a bye week. It's after a bye week.
I know, but even if it wasn't, the Chiefs are getting plus money on the money line.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying as a bet, because I don't think the Chiefs are going undefeated this year. The law of averages in the NFL tell me that I don't think the Chiefs. So if they're going to lose games this year, this is a spot to lose a game on the road against San Francisco, against a desperate San Francisco, by the way, with a premier player at the position that's given you, like, all of that would tell me, okay, this is probably one of those spots, but not coming out of the bye. Not coming out of the bye, I can't do it. Andy Reid's too good out of the bye. Look at the schedule. If we don't think they're going undefeated, and I don't think anybody does because teams don't do that in the NFL, like, now if you look at it, what are the other spots you think they might lose a game? Maybe at Buffalo, at home against Houston, at Pittsburgh? Like, there aren't a lot of spots left. When you go back and you look at their schedule, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
but as we all know, any team can beat any team any week in the NFL. There can always be letdown games. And the Chiefs, as a fan for my entire life, I've watched them play down to their competition and lose games that they should have won. They did that on Christmas against the Raiders a year ago. So those things happen, and that was not a game that anybody had penciled in as a potential loss for the Chiefs. So I'm less concerned about that. And where, like, the most likely places that they could lose any game. Any team can lose any game.
Sure.
In this particular situation, let's take the bye completely out of it. We know how great Andy Reid is, but you even gave a secondary reason. It's Mahomes as an underdog.
Right.
So regardless of a bye or not, Mahomes as an underdog wins games. That's just the way that it is. At a higher clip than anybody else does.
Were they favored? They were favored at home against Baltimore. I'm trying to think. They haven't been underdog.
They've not been an underdog this year at all.
But nobody in the world thought they'd be 5-0 coming into the bye with Baltimore, Cincinnati, Atlanta, the Chargers, the Saints. Nobody thought they were coming into that 5-0, and they are. And so I'm sitting here thinking, is this a 16-1 team, a 15-2 team? Boy, I don't think so. But I also didn't think they'd get the 5-0 start, and they've been very fortunate to get the 5-0 start. So also, if I'm looking at this is the like if we look on their schedule right now, if you looked at the rest of their schedule, what I'm saying is on paper, this is the most difficult game they have left on their schedule. No offense to Buffalo. Now we'll see how Amari Cooper fits in. This is the most difficult game on their schedule on paper the rest of the season. That's all I'm saying. Like if you're looking for that spot,
if you
normal
look,
circumstances without the bye.
If you look at this team as it's comprised right now, and you know, you said you don't see them as a 16-1 team or a 15-2 team, but let's say you see them as a 14-3 or whatever, 13-4.
13-4. That seems more likely to me.
Knowing all of that, is that enough to get you a bye in the playoffs? Probably. Probably is, I would think.
This year it probably is, yeah.
This year it probably is. So that's the way the team is compiled now. I think Brett Veach looks at the same thing, and I think it lends more credibility to they're
back
not
to the
going to do
thing.
Anything at the trade deadline for a wide receiver.
I don't disagree with that, by the way. I don't think they need it to get to that point. I think my concern, and this is why I don't think they'll make a splash move. My only concern is the trade deadline passes and then you have a depth issue get created. Because right now, as I look at the roster, like they'd be in trouble without Juju. They would. If Juju isn't close, and he's not going to do what he did last week every week, but if he's not close to that the rest of the way, they're going to need to get a little better. And they got 2 weeks to watch him play so they can evaluate it. And it's not, you know, there's no rush to do anything. My concern is you got to set yourself up to win a Super Bowl. And I just hate with everything that's already happened to get caught with your pants down a little bit. If there's another injury to that room and you're stuck with picking up scrap heap, if you're stuck with practice squad guys, they can do it. I mean, we know they can, they have, but I don't think it's totally necessary. And so, yeah, if DeMarcus Robinson becomes available, I'd be all over it.
My prediction, I don't like this prediction at all, but my prediction is the trade deadline comes and goes. The Chiefs don't make a move.
They don't do that.
And then if there is an injury and if there is a depth issue and you're in November or December, there are a couple guys out there, one of whom played for the Chiefs last season, that will still be available. I don't want him. I want to be very clear about that. Yeah. But nobody's going to sign Marquez Valdes-Scantling. He will be there. So will Mike Williams. I don't want Mike Williams either. He will. I don't
Mike
think
Williams
another team.
I think Mike Williams.
Teams have looked at what he did this season, and he basically single-handedly cost the Jets like two games.
Yeah.
So I there will be guys, if there's a depth issue, Veach will go to the trash heap and pull somebody out of there to fill a spot down on the depth chart just to get them through. That's what I think will happen. I just don't see them giving up any kind of money or picks or whatever to get anybody by the trade deadline.
I'd be okay with Mike Williams, by the way, if they went and did that right now. I'd be okay with that.
I don't think I would.
I would put it at 50-50. And that's not a cop-out. I genuinely think that's where it is right now, that they go make a trade before the deadline. Again, I think they should.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
I can't say it's likely, but I think it's still very possible. And the market will dictate that. We know that. Like, who loses in the next 2 weeks? Who becomes available on the market? Maybe there's a player where you're like, yeah, that's not available today, but in 2 weeks, you're like, I'd love to have that guy. I mean, that's all got to play itself out too. It's fascinating. Man, I cannot wait for this game on Sunday. What a slate on Sunday. Goodness gracious. All right, Tommy, the Steelers, we got a quick segment here. Steelers make the move to Russell Wilson. Justin Fields says today he doesn't think he played good enough. Like, that's a pretty responsible answer. You think the Steelers are doing the right thing here?
No, I don't. I don't think that from what we've seen from the last couple of years from Russell Wilson that he will do anything for them. They need to solely invest in the development of Justin Fields. There's enough of an upside and a runway with Fields that it's not worth it to go to Russell Wilson.
Heck, I watched him closely in that game against the Cowboys. He didn't look good. I think it's the wrong decision too. But I don't think it's that wrong, because I don't mind Tomlin seeing what Wilson could do within the offense. I think he'll be in some ways a better passer. And he historically he's been one of the best deep ball passers in the history of the league. I mean, he is. And if that's what you're banking on with Fields and then his legs, I don't mind seeing it. I would bet you, though, that by the end of this season, when the Steelers are probably playing in the playoffs, Justin Fields will be their starting quarterback. But you want to take a look at Russ? That's why they brought him in there. It's okay. It's okay to me. Let's see if he can get more out of George Pickens. I mean, that, you know, you can look at it that way. Can he better help create opportunities for your star players, I suppose? But I think by the end of the day, it'll be Fields that's the starting quarterback for the Steelers. That's been fascinating situation. Man, the Steelers just, God, if you like, just figure out quarterback, Steelers. My goodness, figure it out.
Well, I mean, that's been the narrative ever since Ben Roethlisberger retired. You know, they've not been able to figure out quarterback for years.
But they're so dang good everywhere else. Even when Roethlisberger was a corpse out there trying to play quarterback for those last couple of years, right? Like God, just get, how could every player in the league, if you were a free agent quarterback, that'd be like the first call I make if you want a chance to win a Super Bowl, because they feel like they're so close and then they just get nothing out of that position. For Tommy and Max, I'm Jacob. We'll see you then.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.